Let me know. Thanks. We're live. Yeah. Just feed us, baby. Don't drop it out. I heard it drop out the other day.
Drop it like it's hot, yo.
I wasn't. Don't drop it like it's hot. It's so hot. Who's doing the intro?
Oh, yeah.
All right.
Damn. This is the Freedom Feed.
I'm a two-way in my above sea level at Intergalactic Prairie Studios. The alter your locus of release by warming your synapses with regenerative radio waves. This warms your brain to a crispy and crunchy 365 to keep a sin flood of status of your head. Can you feel it? Is it working?
Nice.
Can you feel it?
Yeah. Yup, it's my being. I'm feeling it.
And the Freedom Fiends is covered by a BIPCOT no government license. This allows reuse by anyone except governments. Learn more at BIPCOT.org. Before we get into anything, I just want to do a little disclosure. There is absolutely zero truth to the rumor that Bill O'Reilly is in negotiation to become a third wheel on the Freedom Fiends.
That's kind of funny because JP just sent me a meme that's a picture of me sitting at the table on the Fox News set with BIPCOTs on the monitors on the teleprompters, and I'm holding a cat, and it says tonight on the Odin Factor, liars, socialists, and their sex scandals, which is going to be the image for tonight. I don't care what you guys call the show, but that's the image.
And their stinky feet.
Yeah.
So
what's that, Jason?
Anyway.
What? I am too powerful for y'all. How's this? Is this better? I'm talking. Lou. Live sound checks on the air.
Yo,
yeah.
We are talking.
Yeah.
So there's no truth to the rumor.
What's that, Jason? Hang on. What's that, Jason? All right. You know, for anyone that complains, like, oh, these guys sound check on the radio. I was just watching. We do it because we want it good, and we're doing something unique, which is we're all in different cities. We're all using very inexpensive equipment, and we sound pretty much as good as other radio shows. And we've created this thing of how to do that, including our own software, Fiendphone, including microphone recommendations, how far the mic should be away from your mouth. We've figured it all out, and we've got it all on a site called creamyradioaudio.com. And also, I watched a great documentary the other night about the Stooges and Iggy Pop, the band Iggy and the Stooges. It's called Gimme Danger. I highly recommend it. We talked about it the other night on the show. It's recommended by Jim. It's directed by Jim Jarmusch, and there's a thing in it where they're showing like a TV station's footage of Iggy opening up for the Frank Zappa band in like 1969, and it's like a Howard Cosell kind of like, well, the band has come out and like that kind of thing on the local news. It was weird. And one of the things was, and the band came out and they didn't start playing a song right away. They kind of tuned their instruments for a few minutes and played a little bit and then stopped. And then, you know, I think they're trying to check things, and the audience doesn't seem to mind. The kids are digging it. And that's us. We are the Stooges of talk radio in both senses of the word. So there.
Right now, Nick is Googling who is Iggy Pop and the Stooges. Who is Frank Zappa?
And I'll make a good joke here. That is funny. I'll make a joke. Iggy's rolling over in his grave. That's a train spotting joke. You get it, Phil?
Not really.
I'll probably get it. Iggy's not dead, but in the movie, he's like 68 and still looks great with his shirt off and still does shows that are really, really high energy that look like, you know, put 20-year-olds to shame. Yeah. In the movie Trainspotting, his music is featured a lot in that movie. His song Lust for Life and a couple others. That was kind of his like sort of slash comeback, sort of slash like exposure to the mainstream. Then they started using that song in, you know, Volkswagen commercials, and he sort of like became well known finally after 30 years of doing it. But in that movie, there's a running joke, like, you know, this girl is saying, oh, I'm going to see Iggy Pop tonight. And every like four different people over a period of an hour in the movie say, Iggy Pop, I thought he died 10 years ago. So that's the running joke of Iggy Pop is not dead. Iggy's rolling over his grave.
Yeah, so, he got a little bit of a comeback from his song with Sum 41.
What's her name?
Called A Little Know-It-All.
Oh, yeah. He also did a song that had airplay that was from, there was a duet with the singer, one of the singers from the B-52s, that was a ballad. It was really good. I forget what it's called, but, you know, surprisingly, it was really good. Iggy's done some really, some of the best music ever made. He's also done some mediocre and bad music. It's interesting. He's not, like, consistently great. But that's true of the Rolling Stones, too. You know, if you keep making music for nearly 50 years, you know, you're probably going to make a few duds along with the classics. So,
I still think his best duo job was with Peaches.
I looked at that. I didn't get it. You kids, yeah, it and your terrible. Peaches. Yeah.
No, it was so awful.
And there's no truth to the rumor that Iggy Pop is in negotiations to be a third wheel on the Fiends either.
Actually am talking to one of the Stooges about doing an interview on the Fiends. Talking to Mike nice. Watt. Yeah, because I know him. He's in my movie DIY or Die. So is Ron Ashton, the guitar player from the original Stooges. Mike Watt was in later on the reunion, like 5 years ago. Like, there have been like 14 members in the Stooges, and four of them are dead. Ron Ashton's dead now, but he basically invented punk rock, or maybe the MC5 invented punk rock, and he took the socialism out of it and brought it to the world. Kind of like, you know, Henry Ford didn't invent the automobile, but he put one on every turntable. So I got a topic. I'm not on the whole show, but I have a... we have a new rule in the Freedom Fiends that every hour has to have some liberty. And that's usually not a problem when Lou's on, because Lou is nonstop liberty. But, you know, sometimes the show are just jackbutts all night long. And so I've instituted a rule.
I could do that too, though.
Ah, I know you can. I know.
Why not both?
Why not both? So I got a first-person liberty thing here. So come home today, there's this handwritten note taped on my mailbox that says, "From a concerned neighbor." And I'm like, ugh, what did I do now?
Concerned troll.
Which is, what's that?
Concerned troll.
Yeah, from a concerned troll. So I absolutely instantly think it's me, not because I do anything wrong, but because, you know, concerned neighbor generally means I'm a busybody who's retired and have too much time on my hands and care what happens in your house, even if I can't see it. So it was actually not about me. It's not all about me. It was an anonymous troll, an anonymous concerned neighbor, wanting people to email the city government to complain about a permit that's already been granted for someone a couple blocks away to start a therapy office in their home. And I'm like, what's wrong with that? And it goes on to say that, you know, it's not a halfway house. It's not, you know, I've gotten that letter too at other places I've lived. Like, you know, they're moving a you know, reform home, halfway house for drug addicts and pedophiles. And like, you know, 400 people that don't even live in the neighborhood show up at the city council meeting and quash it. But this is like, I think from what the description is, they're probably using the description that's in the application. So it's really vague, but it's like, you know, therapy session office or something. And they've also applied for a parking permit on their lawn, you know, I guess so there's not street parking. So the people are parking on their lawn when they come there. And I don't really see the problem. Like, even in LibPair, like, let's say it's LibPair and you would get concerned neighbors together. Let's say if someone was starting a, you know, tallow rendering plant next door to you and it was going to smell so much you couldn't live in your house. You know, you'd go to the neighbor. You don't go to the government. And the thing that even bothered me the most about this, other than the snitchy nature of something that really does, you know, it said it's going to drive down our property values. It said it's going to, you know, there's going to be strange people we don't know in the neighborhood. There's going to be more parking, and this could spread, you know. And there was literally a Think of the Children line. It said, like, you know, there will be strange people we don't know coming to our neighborhood, you know, where our children play. That was the line. And I just don't see the problem. And I also, my biggest problem with the whole thing, even like snitching is a big problem, but I can see being concerned about the neighborhood. I could put on my minarchist hat and say, if there was a big problem, you know, and you can only go to the government because they're the permitters on this, you know, my minarchist hat self says, maybe if it's something really, you know, that really drives down the quality of life. I don't see this driving down the quality of life. And second of all, my biggest problem with this thing was they didn't sign it. They didn't give the name of the person. Like, you know, if I were going to do this, if I had a really big problem with something that someone was doing in my neighborhood, like let's say they're going to start an auto body shop next door to me that's going to be really loud, I wouldn't like that. I would go, first I would go to, you know, the person doing it, or I would get some neighbors together and go to the person doing it saying, we really don't want this here. Second of all, you know, why not sign it? I mean, you know, what if I want more information? I just don't like the anonymous write to the government, not to the people doing it, and I won't give my name. That's the worst part of it. What do you guys think?
Well, yeah, I mean, if you're going to list a grievance, you know, this even goes into the minarchist viewpoint. You have the right to face your accuser, right? So
yeah,
I mean, if they're going to try to
it goes
carry
into
force
the,
against
the patriot you. View. I mean, it goes into like the, you know, if you're a God-fearing American who's proud he pays his taxes and you put a flag out every, you know, every military holiday, that guy, you know, theoretically, if he's like, we got to get back to the Constitution, that's like, you know, one of the most important things in the Constitution is being able to face your accuser. Yeah, man.
Right.
Yeah, they're doing it wrong. I think I know who it is. I think it's the lady that I'm pretty sure called this city instead of talking to me. Like, I woke up one morning like 4 years ago, and there were, you know, men from the city in my yard digging. And I was like, what's going on? I went out there. I was like, what's going on? They're like, well, you have a leak. And I looked down. There was like, you know, a little puddle with water bubbling up in it. So the water main leading into my house had a leak in it. And the part that leaked was on my property. So they didn't pay for it, but they were shutting it off. So they shut off my water and handed me a notice that said, you know, I had to fix this within 3 days or face fines. So, in like, if the lady had come, I'm a really, really responsible person. If the lady knocked on my door, I think it's this busybody gray hair that's always walking her dog. I'm positive because she always looks
blue
at
or
every
gray
house.
Hair.
Blue gray.
Which side of the Civil War was she on?
The blue gray hair, and her dog was little, and you know, little dogs. But she. Oh, there's some decent people who own little dogs, but you know, it's a yappy dog, and I think she's a yappy person because she always stares at my house and she walks her dog, and she's the person I see the most, like walking by the house, and she always stares. She stares at every house when she goes by, like she's the horizontal enforcement inspector. And if she'd knocked on my door and said, you know, there's a leak out here, I would have taken care of it.
Meow, but, meow, meow.
And furthermore.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends, tasing you with liberty since 2011. Learn more at freedomfiends.com. Gun Training with the Non-Aggression Principle, Volume 1. Basic Handgun and Rifle with Jared Waltz.
First rule of being alive is you own yourself.
A groundbreaking approach to firearms and self-defense training. Beautifully filmed and easy to understand instructions make this one a must-have. Gun Training with the Non-Aggression Principle, Volume 1. New DVD from Michael W. Dean, available on Amazon.
Your house is your property.
And you never win. All right. Good things.
So anyway, you mentioned Howard Cosell.
No. I'm not done with my story. I got cut off. I'm going to start this new thing where I just, when I stop in the middle of a sentence and realize we're going to break, I come back and just say, like, you know.
Pick up right where you left off.
Like one word, like half a sentence. Yeah, I did that the other day. It's pretty funny. But so the thing is, this lady that I think is responsible for this, I'm actually going to probably go or send us by to the city council meeting in a couple days that's on this, you know, the meeting where this is being dealt with. Because I want to find out if it's that lady. Because I want to be able to go just knock on her door when I have a problem. I don't, you know, I would like to try to open a, I don't know if that'll work. But, you know, and when you go to the city council meeting, you have to give your address. You stand up, you say your name and your address to prove that you have a stake in the problem, that you're in the neighborhood. The thing with this lady is she cost me like $1,000 or $800 because she or whoever, I'll just say it's her, whoever snitched on me about this flood in my yard, like, I would have seen it. You know, I get up at 3 in the afternoon. This was like 9 in the morning or 9:20 in the morning. I would have gotten up at 3 in the afternoon, gone to get my mail and noticed, you know, a big puddle forming in the yard and checked it out. And I would have called. I always do this. I always take care of problems at the house immediately. Like, even if it means, you know, not having money for food or something, like, we take care of the house. Doesn't ever mean not having food, but it means like not buying new equipment I want right away. So, so basically they said you have 3 days to deal with this or you're going to get fined, and there's fines per day. So I called somebody and they're like, yeah, I can be there Monday, which was like 5 days away. And he's like, I was like, I got this thing. It's got to be in 3 days. And he's like, okay, it's $800 more. I can come tomorrow. So, you know, it was $2,000 instead of $1,200. And if this lady just knocked on my door, told me about it, I would have done the same thing. I would have called somebody, you know, found a person, and they would have said, yeah, I can be here Monday. And I would have gotten it done for $800 less. So, yeah, there's a snitch in the neighborhood, man. It's not good. She's old. She will be dead soon of natural causes. But you know what the thing is? People like that live a long time. My dad's second wife was like that, and she lived. My whole life, like, she was just tormenting my dad and being horrible to my family. And you know, when I was like 12, I was like, well, you know, she's old. She'll be dead soon. She lived to 94. Man.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. So. And like, took all my dad's money and then divorced him at, like, 92.
Oh, God.
You know, she has my inheritance. I'm getting nothing, or, you know, probably, like, a collection of, you know, spoons from various states or something from my dad. not that I'm owed something, but I resent that, like, you know, this parasite came into the family, sucked things out of it, and left. You know? It's horrible.
Yeah, that's pretty despicable.
Yeah, and he had 5 rental houses. I mean, they weren't great, but, you know, 5 kind of slummy rental houses that he took care of, so they weren't really that, you know, he was not a slumlord. And she got 4 of them, you know, she took 4 of them before they got divorced. Like, she was like, you need to sign these over to me because I don't trust that you aren't going to leave me with nothing. And he was her 5th husband, you know.
So what you're saying, she was one heck of a housekeeper.
Yeah, she's a black widow. Yeah, and of the other 4 husbands, like, you know, 2 of them died of heart attacks. One of them is broke and penniless and, like, on welfare, and one of them killed himself. So she, you know, my dad got out good, considering. So anyway, people should be responsible for their actions instead of being horrible and or being anonymous. Yeah, yeah. All right. So that's my complaint. I might have more. You guys want more? I'm not going to stay on for the whole show. What did Nick say? Nick's going to drop. Nick's a dropout. He just wrote and said, I'm dropping out hard. Didn't he do that last year?
Yeah, but that was high school.
This is audio. Yeah. Trump executive. Yeah. Oh, are we going to talk about the Trump executive order that he's passed? Of, like,
you mean economic affirmative action?
Yes, affirmative action for American workers. That's right. That's the name of the show. But then we're going to use a picture of me at the O'Reilly. That'll be funny because it'll look like, you know,
yeah.
I got his job from affirmative action because I'm an American worker.
And there's no truth that Donald Trump or Bill O'Reilly are in negotiations to be third wheels on the fiends.
Donald Trump. No, what's his son? His son.
Barron.
Yeah. Barron. What a name. It's like regal. It's like his name is a title. It's like a government title.
Yeah, both of them would have to go through the libertarian re-education camp and get the nap beaten into them on a daily basis before they could be considered third wheel.
Theoretically, you know.
Theoretically, yeah.
We're not going to beat anyone.
Murray Rothbard lectures by day and then Ben Stone at night to go to sleep.
Our words will touch you here and here.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. Go to freedomfiends.com to help keep it drone-proof.
D
Do you want to make money working at home? Join the high-stakes world of selling BIPCOT NoGov merchandise. The BIPCOT No Government License is licensed under the BIPCOT No Government License, which means that you can go to BIPCOT.org, download the high-res logos, and make your own BIPCOT No Government merchandise to sell. The best part is you keep all the profits. And if you send a picture and mail a sample to the good people at BIPCOT.org, they might even help you promote it for free.
As long as you're not a government or a government agent and you don't advocate for any governments in any way.
Help promote liberty, make money, have fun, meet interesting people, be the envy of all your friends. Be the coolest kid at FiendFest Somalia. Laugh at the state while it collapses, all while making and selling your own BIPCOT.org merchandise. What will you design? Get creative. Lots of folks are doing it, but there's always room for more. There are BIPCOT t-shirts, flags, drink cozies, turntable mats, BIPstrong bracelets, BIPCOT stickers, playing cards, and even Glock pistol backplates. You might even get mentioned on the Freedom Fiends. You're still kicking yourself for missing out on the start of Bitcoin. Don't miss out on BIPCOT. Get in on the ground floor now.
Not a guarantee.
Start your new life today at BIPCOT.org. That's BIPCOT.org.
So, you talked about all those old-timey people, Howard Cosell.
Howard Cosell.
And who else did you mention?
Frank Zappa, Iggy Pop, the Stooges.
I'm picturing Nick with this Gary Johnson look on his face, like, what is Cosell?
What is Cosell? Yeah, when I said the Stooges, he probably knows the Three Stooges from, like, Nick at Night, because he probably saw there was a show called Nick at Night, and was like, oh, it's night, I'm Nick, I should watch this. Yeah, we kid, but we kid, but we love him. You know, I have this thing of like that. I gave a rant on the show one time about I don't like dude talk. Like, I don't like how dude. I don't like being involved. I don't mind that dudes do this, but I hate being involved with like how friends insult each other, especially males.
Locker room jocularity.
Locker room jocular, which like. I know 50-year-old people that still do that, and I don't participate in it, and I won't be friends with people that'll do it. I don't mind if they do it with other people, but if I say, look, I don't do that, and after three times, you know, I'll just dump them as friends. But I actually, like, have an exception for Nick. I'll be kind of jocular and rude with Nick, but it's really with love, and he takes it with love, and it's kind of like... You know, we put him in a gentle headlock and give him noogies of liberty.
Yeah. Fine, well, he is kind of small, so it's not like he's going to do anything about it.
Well, he's like a foot taller than me, but I could take him, and I'm on oxygen.
Statist.
What?
Statist.
Because I'm joking about beating him up?
No, because the locker room talk. Didn't you say locker room talk is statist?
Yeah, it's, well... And it occurs in, I went to private school, you know, you would think, well, it's a public school thing, it's statist, it's of the state, but it occurs at private school too, but the private school I went to was basically just a better imitation of public school, like, there was nothing different, like, except, we sat in little rows, we showed up at the same place at the same time,
we
answered questions of knowledge rather than, of information and you know, facts rather than thinking, you know, we were taught the government history. But the classes were smaller. The teachers were teachers were better, and plus there was corporal punishment. It was like, what is it Obama said he wanted to have about rape? Safe and rare. Yeah, that's kind of corporal punishment is at an Episcopal school. It's not as bad as at a Catholic school. You know, it's like Catholicism light. But what? Yeah.
Well, I had a corporal punishment in one of my public schools.
I remember a teacher like spanking a kid, but it was like. First grade was the last time I saw it at public school, and that was 1970 or something, right around there. So it was a long time ago. When was it?
I got the paddle back in the 70s. So did you say it was Episcopalian?
Yeah.
Oh, so Catholicism without all the guilt?
Catholicism with half the guilt and half the corporal punishment. It's Catholicism light. But here's why dude talk is statist. And, you know, if there's a couple people that you have friends with that you really like doing it, I'm not saying you got to stop doing it or you're a statist. I'm just saying, like, think about the fact that basically precisely why it exists is guys who were in the Army and the service. Some seems like more the Army.
Don't call it the service. Just call it the military.
Teacher, yeah, every teacher I had was in the Army, not other branches of the military. People in the Army end up as teachers, it seems like, in public and private school. But including the shop teacher in public school who wouldn't call me Michael Dean. He called me Maggot Spleen as a nickname.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh.
Which isn't even very good. You can think of something better that rhymes. But so here's the thing. Dude talk is trickles down to kids who become adults and keep doing it. It trickles down from drill sergeants. So drill sergeants treat soldiers like that, and soldiers go soldiering and killing people and then come out of the army, always the army it seems like, and then go become school teachers, public and private, and then they met it out on the kids because they think that's how you teach someone, because the last time they were taught anything was by a drill sergeant who treated them like crap, you know. So anyway, I'm not saying you have to be like, oh, I, you know, like talk with nonviolent communication, or I feel this way when you.
Just don't be a Richard.
Yeah, don't be a Richard, man. You know. Oh, speaking of soldiering, I heard the most bizarre thing that like upset me, even though I'm not one of these support the troops guys, rah rah rah. But it's just, it was such fraudulent. So do you guys know about the? There's a bill to. Hey, is Nick back?
No, I just got an email from him saying that he keeps getting booted out. I think his right. Piglets and Yaks are streaming movies or something.
All right. Well, can you email him while I talk right now and tell him that to come back immediately after this episode and I will leave and we'll try that.
You mean after the segment?
After this segment? Yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah. I don't think he wants to wait an hour. Come back in an hour and 20 minutes.
Come back when we go to bed. Yeah, okay. So do you know about the thing? There's a bill for families of victims of 9/11 to be able to sue the Saudi government. You guys heard about this?
No, but go ahead.
So I heard about this thing on the Scott Horton show, and it's from the guy who got the 28 pages released. Do you guys know what that is? It's like some.
Have they actually been released?
I think so.
Redacted. Yeah, the 28 pages. They were remarkably uneventful, but that they're essentially what. Were the smoking gun against that the Saudi Arabia had something to do with it.
Yeah. Did you read them? You did, didn't you?
No, I didn't actually read them.
Okay.
So they weren't redacted or what?
Some of it was redacted, but enough to like apparently show, you know, that the Saudi government, Saudi kingdom was somehow culpable. So
so it's not the bombshell that all the truther idiots thought it was going to be?
No, but it was enough that there was a bill in Congress to allow victims' families to sue the Saudi government. You know, I don't know why they can't also sue the American government, because
there's a lot of bills that go through Congress and none of them are
right,
based
right.
on hard evidence.
But so here's what happened. Here's what happened. So the guy who released got the 28 pages released, who did not sound like a nut at all. I listened to this whole interview on Scott Horton. So basically, there's this group of soldiers that get this call from this guy who's like, yeah, I'm a fellow soldier, and how would you like a free paid visit for a week to Washington, or, you know, 5 days to Washington, D.C., put you up in the Trump Hotel. This is before Trump was elected, you know, which is a really nice hotel. And, you know, and we'll hang out and we'll feed you and take care of you, and we'll go meet Congress, and we'll actually get you in front of Congress, and you can talk to Congress and tell them your thoughts, members of Congress. And like, you know, unemployed or injured or underemployed soldiers, a lot of them were like, heck yeah, I'm there, you know. And so they go there and they go in this room. There's like 20 other soldiers from around the country. These two guys that he interviewed went there. They were brothers who were both vets, and they go in this room in the convention center in that hotel, and the guy leading the thing, the fellow vet, gets up there and says, so, you know, we're going to go meet Congress tomorrow, and here's the thing. There's this bill to allow America, you know, victims of 9/11 to sue the Saudi government. I mean, it sounds great. We want to help victims' families, fellow first responders. However, if this thing passes, foreign governments could sue American soldiers like you for war crimes in international courts, which turns out to be entirely false, according to a bunch of international law attorneys. And they say, but so we're going to stop this. We're going to go meet with Congress tomorrow, and we're going to tell. And like, they scared him into thinking, like, you know, you are going to get dragged to The Hague for having been a soldier. And they all believe it. And, you know, the next day they take them in groups of two or three to go to different congressmen's office and, you know, to visit like five of them in a row, like for 5 minutes each. And, you know, they tell the soldiers like, okay, when you go in, you know, if they ask who you're with, just say a group of concerned soldiers, like say, act like you got here on your own. They'll believe you more, but this is important. And then they pin these things on them that are these from the something like the American Service to the Purple Heart, which is a legitimate company that helps people who've received the Purple Heart with, you know, finding jobs and things like that and navigating through the health system of the government. But they pin them on them, and if you don't look too closely, they look like Purple Hearts. So they're making all these soldiers, whether they have a Purple Heart or not, look like they're wearing a Purple Heart, and then they bring them into Congress to say to congressmen, yeah, we're really against this bill, and, you know, fellow soldiers all feel this way, and we're afraid we're going to get in trouble, and tried for war crimes, and we want you to stop this bill. So they're doing several days of this, and, like, after the first night, they're in the hotel room, and they see... Oh, they have this second orientation, and the guy gets up and he says, okay, so first thing I want to say is this is not sponsored by the Saudi government. All right, anyway, moving on. And they're all like, that never crossed my mind. What are they talking about? Is it sponsored by the Saudi government? And then, like, that night they see two of the – which actually lobbyists, but the people who claim to be fellow soldiers, probably aren't even soldiers, in the hall of the hotel, like, drunk off their butt, like screaming, like in the hall, like high-fiving each other, like, yeah, we figured out how to stop this bill. We'll make it, tomorrow we'll start asking Congress to add something in the bill that no law firm can take more than 5% of any money recovered. They're high-fiving and saying, like, you know, we figured out how to stop it. And then, like, they're telling the soldiers to tell the Congress that. And it turns out that this thing is sponsored, it's a lobbyist group sponsored by the Saudi government. And the soldiers also asked, like, you know, oh, do we have any pamphlets to leave with Congress office or anything so they could read more later or contact you or contact us? And they're like, nah, we're not going to do that because there's a bunch of regulations on it. And, you know, maybe we'll get their address and send them something later if they want it. And it turns out the reason they didn't have anything to leave them is that there's very precise wording that if a lobbyist leaves information and they're from a foreign government, they have to admit it. Apparently, they don't have to admit it, you know, if they're just going in as fake soldiers for lobbyists. I mean, the guy might have been a soldier, but isn't that atrocious? It's horrible, man.
Yeah, that's pretty despicable.
I think the root of the problem is, and people have a tendency to complain about lobbyists and corporations and all the other boogeymen. And don't get me wrong, lobbyists are pathetic, disgusting parasites, but they would be completely harmless if Congress didn't have favors to sell in the first place.
Yeah, it's true. What is it, the 24 pages, Phil? What is it?
28.
I think it was 28.
28 pages. Okay, so since I ranted about this, there, you know, if you want to learn more about this, there's an article on 28pages.org, 28pages.org, about this situation. You know, if you're like, I'm just surprised this isn't mainstream news. It has all the earmarks, you know, like, who wouldn't, the whole story's written, like, what reporter wouldn't want to, I mean, you could lead with this, you know, tonight at 11, Saudi government pretending to be lobbyists and tricking vets into, you know, doing their dirty work, like something like that. Like, my theory is that the Saudi government owns a lot of the mainstream media, like, not a share, but, like, you know, so one of the people directly in the top of the kingdom, not the head guy, but the guy below that, like, owns 5% of Fox News, and I wouldn't be surprised. It sounds conspiratorial, but it's just fact, you know? So there, 28pages.org. Check it out. Worms.
Worms.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. So much truth, it hurts.
Are you tired of driving your kids to Gigi Allen's grave only to be unable to find the grave because some dick stole the headstone? Well, there is a solution. The Find Gigi Allen's Grave app for Android will give you door-to-grave directions. The Find Gigi Allen's Grave app uses advanced GPS protocols to guide you with voices to the exact patch of dust and grass where Gigi took his final dirt nap. Bring the kids. Do some needle drops at the Gigiest place on Earth. Gigi always had a huge underground following, but it's even bigger now that he's literally underground. So it's no surprise that lots of folks today take a pilgrimage to Gigi's grave. But getting there wasn't easy. Until this app. Forget Graceland, forget the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Those are plastic places for old people with jobs. Hell, even CBGB's is gone. And that former hallowed ground is now a yuppie coffee bar. The real rock and roll Mecca is an unmarked patch of grass in Littleton, New Hampshire. And our free app will show you how to get there. Get the Find Gigi Allen's Grave app today. Even if you're not planning to go there soon, the app is fun. The Find Gigi Allen's Grave app is covered by the BIPCOT No Government License, and it's from the good people at Beast Lick Internet Policy Commission Outreach Team, who also brought you Fiend Phone, the Freedom Fiends radio app, BIPCOT, Meow Bit, and of course, Truth, Justice, American Way. The Find Gigi Allen's Grave app is free. Get it today on the Google Play Store or on Amazon. Your family will thank you. And don't forget to rate and review. Worms, eating Gigi Allen's face.
You are back.
Oh, that's me.
Yeah.
Bill.
All right, I heard somebody trying to come back in. I didn't know if it was Michael or Nick. And
Fiend phone.
I thought maybe you got booted too. It's like, man, it's like Oprah tonight. You get a boot. Everybody gets booted. Look under your chair.
You get a droning.
Yeah. Is that you, Nick? Are you here?
Pretty bad.
Yeah, he's still hard buffering.
Max Headroom, we can hear you. Okay, bark for your surrogate father.
What?
Nick, can you speak?
Yeah, but I'm dropping out, guys. I don't think this is gonna work.
Okay, all right. Have a good night. Talk to you whenever.
Okay. Now it's working. As soon as I said that.
Okay, well, stick around then. We'll boot you later. No pun
intended.
If
I drop out, let me know. But now it seems like it's working.
Okay. So, as a young guy, how did you feel hearing those names, Howard Cosell, Iggy Pop, Frank Zappa? Yeah. Did you have any idea who Michael was talking about?
I have a vague idea of who those people are. I know I've listened to a couple Frank Zappa songs.
Were you Googling as Michael was talking about that stuff? Is that something that you normally do?
No, I just kind of roll with it and wait. But I kind of know who those people are, but I don't really know. Like, I couldn't name a song.
All right, so you're thinking in your mind, hashtag just old people stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, so anyway, how old are you again? You're 18 now.
Yes. Right? Yes, I'll be 19 in August.
All right, so in your entire lifetime, there's always been internet, correct? Or at least in your time of being aware. I mean, when you were a toddler, like 1 or 2 years old, you weren't really aware of it, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it's been around pretty much my cognitive life.
Okay. And how old are you, Phil?
I'm 32.
32? Okay, so you're in the middle, and I'm pushing 47. Nick, did you ever learn about using the Dewey Decimal System in the school library? You know, to look up books and stuff like that. How did you guys look up books?
I don't think I used the library very often. I don't remember.
Dewey Decimal, is that any different than regular decimal?
It's not a math equation. It's a card catalog for storing books. Come on, kids.
Yeah, I have used Dewey Decimal myself.
Well,
but
for us,
that was a while ago. Yeah. Most libraries, by the time I was regularly doing research, had switched to, I think, Library of Congress.
Okay, but they had the card catalog where you would pull out the drawer and there'd be like a 3x5 card in there, and it would tell you the number for the book and everything else.
Yes, I have had to go through that.
Okay,
a few times.
So what I was thinking about, and when you look at the gains that have come from the internet and something else, I see the internet as the greatest example of spontaneous order, because people say, oh, well, government built the internet. No, scientists built the internet. But who turned the internet into what it actually is? Because it's more than just having the tubes and stuff like that that connects it. it's all the content creation that goes along with it. It's all the different websites, and some websites are very prolific and just really spread, and then there's others that are duds and they just page fade and they're, you know, they go nowhere. But the thing is, there was no central planner saying, okay, we need this many homesteading and prepping websites. We need this many cat appreciation websites. You know, none of this stuff is people said, okay, let me make a website about this. And either the market accepted it and it went on, or the market said, no, not so much. And
yeah,
it,
internet essentially abolished the gatekeepers.
Yeah. So I mean, it's the ultimate version of spontaneous order, and it's like democracy, but without the gun pointing and the coercion.
Absolutely.
I remember my first time on the internet. I stopped at a friend's house on my way home from vacation. It's like on 11 o'clock at night. She was going to bed. I said, "Let me surf that internet thing," and I was on there till like 7, 8 in the morning. I could barely keep my eyes open. I'm typing with like one finger trying to stay awake. I saw almost the entire internet at the time. We'll be back. Second hour.
Worms.
Hey, this is Nathan Explosion from Death Clock, and you're listening to Freedom Fiends on the radio. Worms.
Having trouble.
My steam kettle's about to start whistling in a couple minutes.
Oh boy.
So, I'm going to do the intro right now. Say, hey, you know, welcome to the second hour of the Freedom Fiends, and we're broadcasting through Libertarian Reeducation Center's Low Orbit Ion Cannon, which you can hear the firing mechanism going in the background. It sounds a lot like a steam kettle. And the Freedom Fiends is covered by a BIPCOT no government license. I'm going to throw it to you, Phil, and you can talk for about 15 seconds while I go pull that thing off the burner.
All right. Wow, that is really uncanny. I mean, you've got all sorts of drones targeting you tonight, Lou. Well, I guess the show does. So, we are actually going to talk a little bit about Donald Trump and his expected executive order, Buy American, Hire American. So, this is a USA Today article that we found. Trump to sign Buy American, Hire American executive order. President Trump will sign a double-barreled executive order Tuesday that will clamp down on guest worker visas and require agencies to buy more goods and services from U.S. companies and workers. Trump will sign the so-called Buy American, Hire American executive order during a visit to Snap-on Tools in Washington.
Kenosha, Wisconsin.
Oh, Wisconsin. Okay, good. I misread that. I thought it was W-A, not W-A-S.
Kenosha, Washington?
Sure. Hey, I don't know the Wisconsin cities or the Washington cities. I've only been here for a few months.
Okay. Now, you did remember to throw in that this is economic affirmative action, right?
I have not, but okay. So thank you.
Economic nationalism, economic protectionism is nothing but an affirmative action program for politically connected cronies. So, yeah. And there's no rumor to the other story that American strippers have lobbied for the H1N1 visas or whatever it is to keep Eastern European and Colombian girls from coming in and working in the strip clubs and being better looking and getting their jobs.
What?
Just wanted to clarify that.
Well, that's good to hear. You know, American strippers are good, down home, you know, honest strippers.
Fiend phone.
Like Putin Fiend said about phone. Russian strippers. American strippers are the best strippers.
Yeah. I had this buddy of mine, and he was one of these diehard union guys. He's like, buy American. But his house was just littered with Asian porn, and I'd give him crap about that too, because he worked for one of the auto companies. I'd be like, "Hey, what's with all that? What's with all that imported porn?" And he's like, "Shh, it's not bad when I do it." So, anyway, continue with Trump's message of socialism.
Well, he's expected to sign this thing on Tuesday, said two senior administration officials who briefed reporters on the order on Monday. The officials, apparently was already signed. I'm getting to this late. The officials spoke on condition they would not be identified because the cabinet-level officials who could discuss the matter on the record were unavailable. By combining aspects of immigration policy with federal procurement regulations, Trump is using executive action to advance his philosophy of economic nationalism without waiting for action from Congress. But like many of his previous executive orders, the order will largely call on cabinet secretaries to fill in the details with reports and recommendations about what the administration can legally do. Specifically targeted, the H-1B visa program, which allows 85,000 foreign workers into the United States each year to take specific high-skilled jobs with U.S. companies. The program is popular with the information technology industry, which Trump has accused of importing low-wage workers on H-1B visas to take jobs from young college-trained Americans. I can say most people coming in on the H-1B one are not, or the H-1B visa are not getting low paid jobs.
Right.
Just an aside from yours truly.
Right. And what that ultimately means, the reason that these people are being imported isn't necessarily to save money. It's not because, hey, they'll work for like $1 per year and survive on that. These people are being imported because there's a shortage of people to work in these high-tech fields.
Well, they're being imported because American public school system stinks the rock.
Right.
I mean, it's terrible. It's especially terrible for guys who want to go in STEM. And, you know, the public schools that America is funneling money into, and, you know, funneling these idiotic educational these pedagogical philosophies into, are just spitting out imbeciles from their programs.
Yeah, STEM
because they're voting out people who don't know anything.
Yeah, STEM is what I was looking for. There's not enough people coming out with these degrees in the STEM type positions. Yeah, ever since people started like majoring in transgender bitterness studies with a minor in feminist interpretive dance and other nonsense stuff, you don't have people going in these fields. You have idiots getting popped out from the government school system, and essentially they're going to be eliminating really good qualified people that know how to do computer programming, stuff like that, just so the cash me outside girl can have a job.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because that's what you're going to be stuck with.
Yeah. And the whole deal about the gender studies thing, colleges are taking in disproportional amounts of women over men out of high school now, because there are so many programs that are essentially targeting trying to get more women into colleges because of these ideas that are coming out of the gender studies department. And they complain up and down, and they still essentially try to discourage men, and I know that's not what they're actively doing, but that it's essentially what they're doing is they're demonizing male entry into these programs in favor of women because they don't have the proper ratio. But they don't have the proper ratio because in general, the women that are being attracted by these These programs that are pushing for more women into these into schools aren't really interested in STEM.
Let's clarify. You're not talking about they're discouraging men from going into the STEM programs. They're discouraging men from going into the transgender bitterness programs.
No, they're discouraging men from studying in college in general.
Really?
Because the issue is that. The way the public school systems are set up are becoming more and more hostile towards boys. So this is like going all the way into, like early education, and it's the whole, they're cutting back on recess, which is like psychologically essential for young boys, and they're doing all this, they're basically diagnosing all of the young boys with ADD and hypermedicating them and whatnot. And also generally public school teachers, for young boys for young children are female. So you have a lot of female public school teachers, which sets up a certain gender dynamic there. I don't want to get into it because I don't have it down enough to really explain. But what's occurring with a lot of the real push for more women in STEM, more women in college, more women in STEM, more women in college, is that you now have an imbalance on the flip side where way more women are going into college and are succeeding in high school, succeeding in college than men are, but they're still not going into STEM fields. And despite all of the active encouragement for women to go into STEM fields. So what you have now is that fewer men are going to college at all, but which adds to fewer men going into STEM fields. And women are the ones that are being successful in college now, but they still don't have any interest in that subject by and large, on average. Obviously there are going to be some that are happy to go into STEM and that's what they want to do, and good for them, that's great.
Because I know I've seen a lot of commercials that have encouraged women to get involved in the STEM type studies, even in like elementary school and middle school and everything else, and then moving on to college. So what it really sounds like you're saying here is that because they're not getting women to go in there, in order to balance it out, they're trying to discourage men from going in there into these STEM studies in college in general. So they're not making...
Well, if that's what I'm... That's not what I'm trying to apply.
Okay. Well, let me finish my thought here. So they're not making one group stronger. They're making the other group weaker in hopes of creating equality, which is basically what economic affirmative action does. So the liberal Democrat, Donald Trump, can't make American workers more competitive. So what he's doing is making the foreign competition, the foreign workers, much less competitive. So rather than building up, he's tearing down, just like the socialists always do in their quest for total equality.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, this really is an issue of a dry market on one end and seeking more supply where it can be found. And all Trump is trying to do is just choke off supply where it can be found and where high value workers can be imported. And all it can do is one of two things. It's either going to bring down the tech industry in America and give more give a higher value to foreign tech companies, or it's going to cause American companies to move out of America to hire foreign workers on foreign land.
Or the third option, which doesn't even seem like an option, it's more of an inevitability, is it's bringing idiocracy into reality. But right. It's also a lot like when the government had a bunch of pigs slaughtered during the Great Depression when people were starving. We'll talk about that when we come back, too.
Worms.
Worms.
You're listening to the Freedom Fiends, and I'm beaming these words into your cerebellum.
Is your child defiant, independent, annoyingly inquisitive? After a long, hard day of following the rules, who wants to deal with troublesome kids? 49% of children suffer from oppositional defiant disorder, or ODD. Symptoms of ODD include independent thought, rampant creativity, and failure to submit to authority. But now there's a solution. The good people at Pilfer can help you with their time-release, once-daily capsule, Compliacin. Your child won't be able to form his own opinions, let alone express them. It maintains your child's ability to go to a state-run school and perform simple tasks around the house. You won't have to worry about parenting, and the school won't have to deal with your kid asking questions. Compliacin. You'll go from this.
Quit telling me what to do!
To this.
Good morning, Mother. I love going to school. And this week we're learning all about how the government is our federal family and they're here to help us.
Compliacin. Talk to your school psychiatrist and ask for it by name.
Worms.
Worms, worms, worms. Speak, Nick.
Hey.
Worms.
Say something before you get droned.
Yeah, I'm finally back. It's working. It seems to be working. I'm happy.
So, Nick, tell us about how you're using your political connections for your economic affirmative action to promote yak meat over beef out in Washington. Or Oregon.
Yes. I don't know if I'm using any affirmative action to do that.
Well, you're trying to get beef outlawed, right?
I it would be great if beef was outlawed. I think it's a danger to our climate, and they should be banned. Cows should be banned.
Nick is regulating H-1 beef visas.
H-1N-1 visas.
Badooch.
Yeah, Nick will become the yak baron when yak meat goes up to $6 million an ounce.
That's right. Yeah, someday it'll get there. I'll surpass Bitcoin here soon.
Pablo Escobar Hazleton.
Slinging
so,
yak.
Anyway, before we went to break, I started talking about FDR and the order of the slaughter of pigs. And it's not entirely unlike liberal Democrat Donald Trump with his trying to eliminate competition. Back during the Great Depression, the central planners, and Trump as being a economic central planner here, during the Great Depression, there was concern that the price of pork was way too low, and therefore the farmers couldn't make enough money off of it. So what the government did was they would purchase all this pork from these pigs from the farmers, and then rather than putting them on the market, they would actually have them destroyed. So they were being killed. They're being thrown into like wood chipper type things. So they would raise these pigs and then kill. Now, because in the Great Depression, when you're destroying food, when people are going hungry, people started taking a dim view on the destruction of food. So then they started paying farmers not to produce food anymore, not to produce these pigs, to lower the amount of pigs in there because they understood supply and demand, although they never applied the lessons that they learned properly. Excuse me. Now, there was also acres and acres and acres and acres of cotton and other crops that were burned in the field. And the reason that they were burned was because originally they were going to have the farmers grow the stuff and then plow it under, you know, with their mules pulling the plows. But the mules had been trained to walk in between the rows of crops so that they would not damage the crops. So when the mules would not damage the crops by plowing them under, that's when they started burning. So it turned out that the jackasses in the field were a lot smarter than the jackasses in Washington, D.C. But just like Trump was doing, they are eliminating a supply and making demand artificially high, thereby raising the price of it. And also, if you look at what happened with paying the farmers not to produce food, if you're not producing food as a farmer, if you're getting paid not to produce it, do you need farmhands? Do you need to pay farmhands to not produce it? No. So there was a headline in the newspaper, and as I recall, it said 500,000 Negroes out of work after farm subsidies or after farmers paid not to produce. So in a time of major unemployment, they create more unemployment. In a time where people are standing in soup lines, they're taking food off of the market. And it's absolutely no different than what's going on with Liberal Democrat Donald W. Hussein Trump.
Yeah, absolutely. It's pretty surprising that people still harken back to those New Deal eras where these policies were instituted. And it's too bad that the still happens today, but that's government, right? Keep using the same old tricks.
Well, they're learning this nonsense in the same government schools that's teaching them how to vote instead of how to program a computer or balance a checkbook.
Mm-hmm.
Right. There is one bright side about this, though. All of the all of these H-1B visa jobs are tech jobs. They're usually programming jobs. That means software jobs. That means jobs that are that can be done remotely. So it's very possible that this, what he's doing, is doesn't even have any effect, because all that it ends up doing is just causing more remote work to happen rather than bringing in immigrant workers.
So what you're saying is it's bluster to make it look like he's doing something?
Very possibly.
Okay. Very typical, too. We'll be back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're listening to The Freedom Fiends, an invigorating alternative to those other shows.
When you shop online, please do it through the Freedom Fiends Amazon link over on the right side of freedomfiends.com. It won't cost you any extra, and the Fiends will get a little taste from Amazon, and Amazon will save you the danger of drive-by stabbings at your local mall. Amazon sells pretty much everything you can buy on this earth, except for guns and weed. But they do sell the DVD Guns and Weed, The Road to Freedom. So get that for your gun-hating stoner brother or neocon gun nut dad. They'll thank you for it. That's freedomfiends.com. Freedom, Foxtrot, Echo, Echo, November, Sierra.com.
And go on the sidebar of the Freedom Fiend site. We now have Amazon links for Amazon US, Amazon UK, and Amazon Canada due to popular demand. Worms.
Cover some happy news tonight. This subject came up earlier today because where I live in Bear Saskatchewan, there's no public transportation system per se. So you don't have the public horse-drawn carriage going through town, dropping people off at their different appointments and their shopping at the general store and trading posts and stuff like that, because we are back in the 1800s up here. But I brought up the Detroit Bus Company. It's something I talked about on the show a long time ago. It's been quite a while since I've even thought of them, because living in Bear Saskatchewan now. But the Detroit Bus Company is the solution to a government problem. And if you go to thedetroitbus.com, check out their website. There's a nice little video. There's a little documentary on there. And the young guy, his name is Andy DiDorossi, I believe it was pronounced. And he started the Detroit Bus Company around age 25, I think it was, 25 or 26. He came up with like $3,500, bought an old school bus, had some local artists graffiti tag painted up and everything like that. And he managed to do what the local government was incapable of doing, meaning having a very large vehicle go up and down the street successfully. And it's really interesting because watching the video, and I've seen a few others on him, but I'm just going to reference the ones that I've seen tonight. He's talked about the motivation for it is he believes that the light rail would be a economic boom for Detroit, where people come from Ferndale and Royal Oak, which is north of the city. It's out in the suburbs. He believes that people would want to take the train going down into downtown Detroit and do all the shopping and stuff like that. And at the time when he came up with the idea for Detroit Bus Company, it was, I believe it was like 2012, and that was at a time where the light rail was just dead in the water. Incidentally, they started working on it a year or so ago, and the cost of it, I believe, is going to be about $47 million per mile of rail.
Oh.
So I'm sure that investment, I'm doing air quotes there, that investment will be recouped very quickly, like in the first, I don't know, 1,000 years. But anyway, no. So... He had this idea. He says, you know, hey, you know, if we can't get this rail going and doing this, so how about if we do it? And from what I've seen in another interview, he believes that public transportation is something that the government should provide. So what's really interesting is when he talks about things that the government should do, he sounds like a liberal Democrat. When he talks about things that the government screws up and how they make it difficult to get stuff accomplished, he sounds like a conservative Republican. And then when he goes out and does it himself without, you know, going around the government, you know, without being a part of the Leviathan, he sounds like a libertarian anarchist. So I can't really place him that well there. But Nick, you've seen the videos. What did you take away from both the promotional video that they have and then also the TED Talks?
I thought it's quite an interesting project. I love when people are when people notice an issue in their area or, you know, in the world, wherever it is, and they decide to make a change somehow, and especially if it's not using coercive enterprise to do so, I think it's even better. So I thought this was really cool that this guy's started up a private bus company to solve an issue that the government couldn't. I thought it was quite brilliant. And in the TED Talk, I really liked what he was saying.
Oh yeah, it was hilarious.
Yeah, he's quite entertaining. But I liked what he was saying about how he went about doing all these things and figuring out how to make money and do, you know, what he wanted to do. I thought he was quite an inspirational person. But yeah, I think this is really cool.
Yeah, it's really a great example of how much good can be accomplished if you stop looking at the government to do something for you and you do it yourself. It's personal responsibility, folks.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
That's really all it is.
Now, here's something else. One of the motivations that he was talking about, and I lived in the city of Detroit, and there was a couple months where I had to ride the bus. This is back when I was getting out of the homeless shelter and starting a new job and everything. This is before I could get a vehicle and everything else. And what I noticed was there were so many times where the bus drivers wouldn't show up because they were up in Lansing, the state capitol, protesting. They'd call in sick for the day, and then they'd go protest because they wanted more money or they didn't want hours to be cut. I mean, basically, it's just them protecting their own interest. And there were a lot of people that, well, one, the bus system rarely ran on time. I don't even know if it was on time first thing in the morning. But there were a lot of people that lost their jobs because the bus didn't show up or it showed up late. And it got to a point where employers would not hire people that rode the bus because they couldn't depend upon them. Here you have these city workers that are strangling the economy and they're strangling the economic prospects of the people that they allegedly serve. They're making the argument of, we are so essential, but people are suffering because they are screwing stuff up, because they can't provide the service. So that's one of the things that he had mentioned in the video. And they also wound up providing transportation to kids. I think they got some contracts to maybe to drive kids to school on the little bus system, because I know that like the Smart Bus and the Detroit Transit Authority buses take kids to school too. They give them bus coupons or bus passes, whatever. But anyway, on this, I've been seeing that they have transportation to kids to go to after school programs and get rides to school, and they got this thing on the website is called Ride for Ride. So when you make a purchase, when you purchase a ride, and one of the other things that they do is they'll do tours through Detroit, so they'll take you to these different points of interest and stuff like that. But when people purchase bus tickets, whether it's for one of these tours or if it's just regular transportation, that will also go to purchase a ride to school for kids or to the after school programs. And it's not entirely different from what Dale Brown does at Detroit Threat Management. He subsidizes the cost of providing security to the poor folks, and then also when they do security for personal protection for witnesses and things like that, or people that are in domestic violence situations, he subsidizes that cost with what he earns off of the higher priced corporate clients. And it works. So they got this ride for ride thing there, and but it's really funny when he talks about what it took to get into this business, because of regulations. He says, okay, I want to get a bus, and I'm gonna take people from here to here, and we're gonna have this bus line, and it's going to take people to different destinations. And the insurance, as he said it was like $90,000 a month per bus, and because they never hear anything like this, the insurance companies, and they're all funded by the city. So it kind of explains why the city transportation industry is so expensive and just has to be subsidized like that. So in order to get around this nonsense, he said, all right, well, we're going to do a party bus, and we're going to go from bar to bar going down the same route. And they're like, oh, okay, no problem here. You could do this for pennies of that cost. Mm-hmm. But it's interesting that he talks about that the only place that this would work would be Detroit. He says it wouldn't work in San Francisco, Chicago, or anywhere else. And he doesn't really go into why. I personally think the reason why it could work is because at the time that he started, the Detroit city government was just collapsing. It was incapable of stopping commerce like this. And plus, yeah, he's smart, the parasite
already sucked all the blood out, and now it has no food.
Yeah. So, I mean, he and his buddies are a lot smarter than the politicians, because they keep finding ways to get around all the anti-commerce policies of government. So yeah. It's pretty interesting. And also in the TED Talks, he was talking about how he got started. I mean, his first business venture was buying an old car at a police auction for $200, doing a little work on it, turning around, selling it for $1,200. Then he bought this large warehouse type deal and sectioned off space and rented it out to entrepreneurs. So I mean, it's really interesting all the things that he's done.
And yeah, this guy is pretty cool, I think. That he's definitely, if you're interested in business, I think he's somebody to pay attention to, and I'm going to keep him on my radar.
Yeah, he might not be an anarchist, but he certainly acts like one.
Yeah,
and then here's something else. This is what I just found this out today. The guy has a podcast. I never knew about it today. I haven't heard any of the episodes, but what I'm gathering from looking at the shows that they has listed on there, it's meeting with local entrepreneurs that are doing the same thing or similar to what he's doing, as far as going in and building business and going out and competing and taking care of their community.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, so it's really amazing. Phil, do you have anything else to add to throw in on this?
Well, sort of some of the issues that he had to deal with getting this whole thing started. I mean, a whole lot of people like to blame car companies for killing Detroit. But, the reason why car companies are thought to have killed Detroit are because they left. But why did they leave? They left because the parasites were relentless there. And that's what killed Detroit.
Now, I don't think Ford Motor Company ever had a factory in the city limits of Detroit. But right. I know General Motors and Chrysler did. And when you look at what government has done, not just the local government, but state and federal, and that's why these companies are going to Mexico. It's like you moved from Virginia to Washington not too long ago. You did that for a job, right?
No.
No?
No.
Okay.
No.
Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean. This is what radio sounds like now.
Hi, have you heard about Bitcoin? Not Bitcoin, but Bipcoin. Bravo, India, Papa, Coin. Bipcoin is a new cryptocurrency that you can start mining today for free on ordinary computers. Unlike most altcoins, Bipcoin is not a clone of Bitcoin. Bipcoin is based on entirely new, more recent, and better code called CryptoNote. So unlike Bitcoin, Bipcoin has truly untraceable transactions, does not require specialized mining rigs, and has adaptive limits. Plus, Bipcoin is the only cryptocurrency covered by the BIPCOT No Government License. This allows use and reuse by anyone except governments and government agents. If you're still kicking yourself in the head for not getting in on the ground floor of Bitcoin, start mining, using, and trading Bipcoin today.
Not a guarantee.
Mining Bipcoin costs you nothing but the electricity to run your computer. And we already take Bipcoin for stickers and buttons. Go to Bipcoin.org. That's Bipcoin.org. Once again, that's Bravo, India, Papa, Coin.org.
And then the rabbi said, wait.
So we do have a minor correction.
Yeah, Lou applied some enhanced interrogation techniques to me over the break, and I have to admit, I did misspeak. It's not that I didn't come here for a job, but I did come here looking for a job. So,
well, it was also better economic opportunity because of the field that you work in.
Right, exactly. Yeah, this is a very high volume place for data science, which is my field, and. That's part of one of the biggest reasons why I moved out here. So,
in other words, you went to an environment that was better suited and more friendly, which is the same reason that a company would pick up and set up shop somewhere else. And if a company's going to move to Mexico, or if they're going to open an operation in Mexico, if they're going to open an operation in a foreign country, are you guys familiar with the concept of regime uncertainty?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay. In a nutshell, it's not knowing what's going to happen, not knowing what type of policies are going to come out down the road. And it could be from a straight up, you know, we don't know what's going to happen because this is a new person without a record to follow. So there's no way of knowing exactly what that person's going to do or these people are going to do. Or it could just be, what are these crazy bleepers going to do next?
It's what happens when gold is illegal 1 year, but then legal the next, and alcohol is legal the first year and illegal the next.
Yeah.
When that type of stuff happens, you have regime and uncertainty.
Yeah.
But it's even worse with business regulations.
Yeah. So if you're in an unfriendly environment and you have to go to a banana republic that's corrupt like Mexico, or if you feel that you have more regime certainty or your investment is safer in the former red communist country of China than it is here in America, well, then there's a problem. And the problem isn't that government's not doing enough. The problem is that government's doing way too much. But I generally believe that any government action in the economy is way too much. But this next story here, I got a little something to close out with, and this may coincide with your move to Washington, and then also why companies leave. And this is from The Onion. So that bastion of really good news. FEMA recommends Americans always have go bag packed in case past finally catches up with them. From Washington, warning citizens that they should be prepared to evacuate at a moment's notice, officials from the Federal Emergency Management Agency recommended on Wednesday that Americans always keep a go bag packed in case their past finally catches up with them. You never know when you'll receive a knock at your door from someone who you'd hoped you'd never see again, so it's vital to have a bag ready that contains $5,000 cash, a loaded revolver, at least 3 passports with separate identities, and change of clothes for a variety of different climates, said Acting FEMA Director Robert J. Fenton, adding that residents should designate an alternate exit from their home in case the front door is obstructed by a person who calls out to them by their former name and says, What? You think I just forgot? And since you might have just minutes or even seconds to safely vacate your property, have a pre-written note on hand that you can quickly drop on the kitchen table telling your family that you had to leave, but you love them very much. The faster you can leave your home, the more likely you are to survive, even if you now realize that your days of running will truly never be behind you. Fenton went on to say that every American should have a first aid kit in their go bag in case a bullet catches them as they turn the corner. And that's news that you can use. You know, that's one thing I like about FEMA is they're really good at helping people to prepare for emergency situations. So, anyway, all right, we're going to be done in a minute. So, I want to close out with Midwest Peace of Liberty Fest. Early bird pricing is going in. Will be ending April 30th, so I think May 1st it goes up to regular pricing. Go to mplfest.org, round up your friends and family, and get them registered today, and I will see you out there. It is June 22nd through 26th. It's a day longer. The Liberty Fest is not getting shorter. It's getting longer.
Woohoo.
So, okay. And Nick, you'll be out there. You're going to be flying out there on Yak Back.
Mm-hmm. The yaks have sprouted wings, and we're heading that way.
That'll be the day when yaks fly.
I'll be over here being jealous of you guys having so much fun.
Well, a certain number of fiends always have to be in secret, undisclosed locations. We can never have the whole bunch of us together at one time. You know, it's for continuity of fiend.
That makes sense.
Yeah. But anyway, thanks for coming on tonight, guys. Everybody, thanks for listening. And for more Freedom Fiends, go to freedomfiends.com.
Worms.
Worms.
Wimes.